afternoon, members. We'll call this meeting of the Education Finance Committee to order. The first order of business is House File 2127, the Representative Myra Bill. And Representative Myra moves that House File 2127 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Myra, my understanding is you have two amendments, the A1 and A4 amendments.
Yes, I do.
All right,
Thank you, Mr.
Representative Myra moves the A1 amendment. Did you have an oral amendment to this amendment?
Yes, I do. I'd like to incorporate it.
Okay, and what is that amendment, Representative Myra?
That is changing the phrase digital curriculum on line 418 to technology.
Okay, so on line 418, changing
digital to technology.
Digital curriculum to technology.
Digital curriculum to technology. Did staff get that?
Yep.
Okay. And so we will incorporate that into the A1 amendment. And this is to get the bill in the form the author would like. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. And Representative Myra, you also have the A4 amendment. No amendment on that one, correct?
Correct.
And this is, again, to get the bill in the form that the author would like. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. Representative Myra, my understanding is that the bill is now in the format you would like, and that the 2127 bill was discussed pretty extensively in policy. Any financial considerations you want the committee to be aware of? I see we do have a fiscal note in the amount of $208,000 for fiscal year 13. But I think your amendment took care of those concerns.
It did.
All right. Anything else you'd like to say about your bill?
No, I'd appreciate your support.
All right. This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of this bill. Any questions or discussion from members? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. House File 2127 has passed and is sent to the General Register. Representative Myra, we thank you for your concise and abbreviated presentation. The next bill on the agenda is House File 329, Representative Bills. If you could go up to the table. While we're doing that, Representative Erickson moves approval of the minutes from the February 16th meeting. Is there any corrections or additions or discussions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion fails. The minutes are adopted. All right. Representative Bills moves that House File 329 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. Representative Bills, my understanding is that you have an amendment as well.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move the DE2 amendment.
Representative Bills moves the DE2 amendment, which... Do members have a copy of the DE2 amendment in their packets?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greiland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to object to that last bill rushing out so fast. There are 7 days on the Hill here today, or at least that seemed to be on my calendar. There's probably more than that. And, 3 minutes in to do a bill that some are very interested in, I object to that kind of speed being good government.
Okay, Representative Greiling, we did open it up for testimony from the public as well. So it wasn't it certainly was a brief presentation, but we did not we opened it up for testimony from the public, and there was no members of the public who testified either in favor of or voiced concerns with the bill. So I don't know how we could have behaved differently other than to start the committee late. We don't, and the tradition of this committee is we start on time, Representative Brown.
And Mr. Chair, I definitely support that tradition, but but to let some minority members actually get in their chairs before passing it, I think would help greatly with the floor discussion.
Okay. Well, Representative Greiling, we did have members of both parties in the hearing, but I appreciate that, and if we need to start a committee later or do that to make sure we have more members of the minority party here, then we can talk about that.
Well,
Representative Greiling.
Mr. Chair, I don't mean to start later. I think you should always start on time, but I think to actually take a vote and move a bill to the floor without 3 minutes after the committee starts is excessive speed, and excessive speed usually means that later you're going to take a lot more time, and I think that time of working things out should be done in this committee, not on the floor. If I were Representative Myra, I would prefer to have things asked about and decided and worked out in this committee and not be open to unsuspecting things that might have been fixed in this committee.
Thank you, Representative Growling. I appreciate you sharing that with me. And if we have three bills on the agenda today, and maybe you and I can discuss offline that maybe we should we'll consider having the committee come back. If we wrap up everything on time, we can talk about the issue more at the end of the committee, or maybe we could talk about coming back at 5 o'clock. Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Coming back at 5 o'clock is fine with me, but maybe not with everybody. But my final question is the mandate still in there that every student in ninth grade take an online course? And if that is still in there, what was the fiscal note for that for local school districts?
Well, Representative Greiling, I'll ask, I'll have that question go to Representative Myra on the bill. She's ready to answer that, and then we'll move on to the next bill on the agenda. But then any additional questions we'll either take up later on today, or we'll discuss the possibility of coming back at 5.
Mr. Chair, that is my final question.
Thank you. So, Representative Myra, did you hear out of deference to the...
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, yes, there is on line 2.1 through 2.5 a requirement for students to take one digital course in high school that is effective for graduating seniors 2019. In talking to the legislative auditor and others and looking at current statute, it doesn't change anything for high schools. Currently, they are required to offer digital courses to their students. And what they can already take those digital courses. If you look on, let's see. Line 7.31 to 7.33, the department already develops, publishes, and maintains a list of digital providers that are already out there, and so that students can select from those courses already.
Oh, Mr. Chair.
Representative Breiling.
Line 2.1 says high school students must receive at least one digital course rather than just being offered. It's the must receive that is the unfunded mandate, and that's what I think there should be a local fiscal impact statement for that, and I'm surprised that there were no no testifiers that wanted to ask about that in this committee. In the audience, because we've been very careful not to have unfunded mandates for local school districts when we aren't giving them any money. And so then they have to do one more thing with less. And that's my question. And it still will remain, and I will pursue it on the floor. So I think you might want to have that answered here with what does that cost and so forth, rather than take it to the floor. I would rather do that with you here than on the floor. But I will do it on the floor if we don't do it here.
Representative Greiling, Representative Myra, we'll revisit that in this committee then, either later on in this hearing or this evening. So Representative Bills. Representative Bills moves House File 329 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register. And Representative Bills moves the DE2 amendment. Did you have an oral amendment to the DE2 amendment, Representative Bills?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I do.
Proceed with that, please.
My oral amendment would be to delete line 1.11, delete line 1.12, renumber line 1.13, change the 4 to a 3, and delete line 1.14. And that completes my oral amendment.
Okay. And this is to put the bill in the form that the author would like. Representative Greiling, this is not the this is not within 24 hours. From my understanding, as this is done to the Peace of the Valley Amendment. So I just want to run that by Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So then I would need it repeated. Is he working off the original bill or the delete everything amendment?
The delete everything amendment.
Okay, and then could you repeat what he just said?
Representative Bills, could you please repeat that just to make sure that staff and all members hear that?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The oral amendment would be to delete 1.11, the entire line, delete 1.12, the entire line, renumber line 1.13, changing the 4 to a 3, and delete line 1.14. the entire line.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I have it now. So the what's still standing is number four, what's now number four, but it's renumbered.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Does that complete your oral amendment?
Yes, it does, Mr. Chair.
Members, all those in favor of the DE2 amendment, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. And Representative Bills, that's it with the amendments, correct?
Yes, sir.
To your presentation, please.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 329 seeks to codify long-standing Attorney General opinions and U.S. District Court ruling. Specifically, the bill enumerates political activities at minimum that will be prohibited with public resources through district policy. House File 329 provides clarification that said policy will only pertain to employees when they are in an official capacity and performing their duties under contract. Lastly, the bill also enumerates that districts must provide factual information to the public regarding local ballot initiatives. I guess you could just say the bill works to ensure that our schools are a place of learning, not politicking for any side. I have also distributed a copy of the Lakeville ISD 194 policy that is a yellow copy that you've had that you can find in your packet. That was upheld by the U.S. District Court in Education Minnesota versus Lakeville School District 194 in 2004. This is one district and possibly the only district that has taken the Attorney General opinion seriously and worked to create a policy based upon it. If it would please the chair, we could move to testimony, or I would be happy to answer questions.
Well, Representative Bills, it's your presentation, so it looks like you have a well-educated staff or testifier here who could enlighten us and provide additional information to the committee. So at this time, would the testifier please introduce herself and state your name for the record?
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Michelle Volk. I am currently a school board member for the Lakeville School District, and I have been a school board member for over 10 years. As you can see from our policy, I believe it should show you that it's been in place since, maybe it doesn't, but in my copy, if you look on our website, policy A100, it shows that it's been in place since 1997. Our policy was created due to public and parent complaints that campaigning was taking place in our schools. And I won't go into a lot of detail, but you know, one of the complaints was that we had staff members that had political campaign signs actually in windows, so when the community was driving by, they could see, you know, who people were supporting, et cetera. Some teachers were actually taping signs, et cetera, onto their desks. The other thing that had taken place is that some of our high school students were recruited during the daytime to actually help with flyers, stuff envelopes, those types of things, activities that were taking place on behalf of endorsed candidates. So our policy was put into place, and as you can see, basically it covers those types of activities not taking place in the school. And as was mentioned, it has been challenged in the federal court in 2004. And basically the premise of the challenge was to be able to have flyers put into the staff mailboxes on behalf of a presidential candidate. And the district wouldn't allow it according to the policy. And that was upheld in court. And the reason it was upheld according to the judge, or at least one of the reasons, is because Lakeville had been fair and balanced in upholding this policy all along, and at this point there wasn't any, the judge couldn't see any reason to change that. There is, if you look in section, let's see, and the procedures in section C, there is an allowance for what we call public fora. And that clause is in there in case, let's say, a PTO were to request that they would like to have local candidates come in and maybe have a debate. Well, the only way that that can take place is that a special request comes to the school board and a date, a time, a building is designated. There's parameters that are put on that activity, and then the school board would vote whether or not that can take place. So that's how the policy is a little balanced. It's like it helps to keep some of these activities not taking place during the actual school hours. During the last referendum that we had, our teachers union actually formed a vote yes committee, and they adhered to the policy, and basically I don't think that it was a very big hindrance for them. Everything went well for, and they were able to state their position. Our copy of our policy is available in all of our school buildings. It's available on our website, and it's also placed in our student handbooks. Our administrators each and every year go into the buildings, talk about the policy, answer any questions, especially for new staff members, etc. And I guess in summation, I guess I wanted to just say that this policy has worked very well for the Lakeville School District, and basically we've been able to thrive in the business of education in our school district. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Volk. Representative Bills, do you have any additional testifiers?
No, I do not, Mr. Chairman.
This is a public hearing. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? If so, please come forward.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Roger Arnson. I along with Mr. Krumquist and Ms. Dozland and some others, we've met with Representative Bills multiple times about this bill, and we appreciate the amendment that he's offered here to make this work. I think that he's appropriately represented to you that this tends to codify an area of law that has more been on the Attorney General opinion that came out some years ago. And some years ago, he's been reading opinions that date back to 1927. So you have to give him some credit for the
for the
work.
Has been reading opinions back to 1927.
Well, Mr. Chair, we have taken a look at these, and I think it's important for the members of the committee to know why this type of legislation is both appropriate and necessary. In the old days, the general legal rule was school districts could only do those things that were expressly authorized by statute. And the Attorney General's opinion says school districts were never authorized to expend political funds or resources for candidates for office, for referendum questions, or political purposes. And absent that express authorization, that activity was prohibited. And in one point, the AG actually says illegal. On the other hand, there were very specific statements of what school districts could do. That changed in the 90s, where the legislation in the general powers statute for school districts was added to add implied powers, and the things that furthered school districts' interest that they would have any legitimate business powers to do those sorts of things. And that's where the line got a little bit fuzzy here, and Representative Bills, by taking this, is basically going to say with this bill that school districts should adopt a policy as the one that is in a place in Lakeville governing these activities, so it's clear, and we think that's a good thing, Mr. Chair, and support this bill.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Scott Krunquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and I won't be repetitive, but I do just want to go on the record thanking Representative Bills for being willing to work with us, and we think with the amendments that you had just adopted has addressed our concerns, and we can support the bill. And thank you, Representative Bills.
Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? We'll take questions.
Oh, because it's worth one of the testifiers.
Yeah, we'll just have them go back. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Kirk Stein. I'm on staff with the Minnesota School Boards Association, and I briefly talked to Representative Bills about this issue, and I think one of the, as an association that represents all 340 school districts, I think this is one of those issues, again, that has worked for Lakeville, has worked very well for Lakeville, and there we've had some inquiries in our office about additional adoptions of this amendment, of this policy. So I think it's important to consider when, as a school board member, one way that you govern is through your policy development, the policy adoption. And I think that when you go through a piece that goes through an adoption policy, then you've also got to consider training of staff. You know, also, if you're a good school district, you'll follow through on that training to make sure it's been implemented and perhaps collect some data. So I think that part of the discussion, I think, is that for you guys, is that is this going to be a mandate for school districts? And I would say, in part, it is, because the other school districts who have adopted this have found that it works for them. Other districts, on the other hand, perhaps have not. And I think that it may not have had the same issues before them. So we're just raising that issue and be available for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Kiselishin. I've been a resident of the Roseville School District for the past 26 years. I have two children in the Roseville schools. I served as mayor of the city of Roseville from 2000 to 2004. And an interesting fact here is Representative Greiling actually handed me my graduation diploma from high school back a number of years ago. I have two handouts. One of them is one that has yellow highlighted that I highlighted on there. And then the second document is titled Roseville Legislative Action Committee. I'm here to speak in favor of the bill, but I'm hoping that this could be strengthened as it goes through the process. I feel that education dollars should be spent on educating children, not spent on partisan political action committees. But unfortunately, though, this is being done in the Roseville School District today and has the support of the Roseville School Board. Now, in my opinion, the school district supporting a partisan political action committee should be made illegal, and frankly, it should be categorized as a crime with criminal consequences. Now, several years ago, our school board created a group called the Roseville Area Schools Legislative Action Committee, and the district has provided support staff, board support, email, website, so on and so forth, all supported by the taxpayers. Now, this group claims to be nonpartisan and issue-oriented, but as you can see from the letter that I received as a parent back last year, actually all the parents in the district received this letter. This letter here is about as nonpartisan as a press release from a political party. The difference is a political party is supported by private dollars. This handout here was distributed using taxpayer resources and taxpayer dollars. Now, when I filed a complaint with the school board, the response was that they violated none of their policies and that these type of communications are perfectly okay, no problem with them. When I raised the question with the county attorney's office, their response was that since none of the people named in this letter were technically candidates running in an election, none of the campaign finance laws and none of the laws that prohibit public employees from compelling others to campaign applied because there was no, quote, campaign going on. Now, I think the bill is a good start, and I hope it moves forward, and I hope it is adopted. But there's a couple, three points I wanted to make here. First, it appears that under this current proposal here, the school district will still be able to use taxpayer dollars to attack legislators in general, maybe just not on some particular proposal, which is how this lit piece here was done. Second, it appears that many of the prohibitions apply only to employees, but it appears that maybe elected officials and volunteers may be able to continue to use school district resources or have access to district information that either the public has no access to or the public would have to pay to get access to. For example, the general public can't just walk into a school building and ask the school administrator to send out a letter using the school district's email listserv system. The Legislative Action Committee can do that, but I, as a private citizen, cannot. Now, third, there's no penalty for violating this proposal. When a violation occurs, the board, like in my case, will simply state that it's a personnel matter, and therefore the action on any complaint is protected by data practices laws. So in other words, nothing will happen. And I would ask that maybe there be a consideration that this be considered a misdemeanor for this type of activity, or at the very least give citizens the right to maybe file an action with the Office of Administrative Hearings. There needs to be some independent process here to evaluate if there is a violation of this type of activity. I'll stand for questions, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We're going to conclude. We're going to take all public testimony, and then members can go back and ask individual members of the public questions.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswiger, Education, Minnesota. I think that you just heard that this system is working very well in a couple of school districts, and that school boards on their own can determine what those policies are. And I commend Lakeville for taking the actions that they did. Sometimes there are things that happen that are inappropriate in school districts, and I think the administration, the school board, should do what is appropriate. And if that is the case, they may adopt a school board policy. So I see this as a mandate that is overreaching. I'm sure most of you are aware, because I've testified a few times on this bill, that it is the Department of Administration's opinion, which was released publicly, that school employee email addresses are public data. So some of you may have even requested those email addresses. Certainly a number of legislators currently seated have requested the email addresses of some of our members and have sent political surveys on legislative issues to our members asking what they think. So a legislator can send an email for political purposes, that's number three on line 1.13. But now the school employee is not going to be able to respond unless the administration says it's okay. There's a reason why administration is here supporting this and that the school employees are not, because if you look at line 1.15, they shall not be prohibited except when performing duties assigned to them under their employment contract with the district or representing their employer in an official capacity. So does that mean now that employees can speak freely if it fits with the administration's point of view? And is that really how we want to be interpreting freedom of speech? I'm not an attorney who is terribly wise on freedom of speech, but it certainly seems that the administration has a lot more say and the school employees don't unless the administration gives them the authority. And if a teacher uses their email to talk about, you know, between each other about a political purpose, is that a problem? And what is on line 1.13 a political purpose? So we think that there are a number of issues with this bill. We think that people can talk to them politically. Legislators ask our members what they think, but yet I think there'd be a serious question as to their ability to do it. And then I would just add, if they did it, would they be considered an ineffective teacher? There are a number of issues related to this. I thank Representative Bills. I think he's got some good intentions. I think this is reaching farther, and I would encourage school boards to take the power that they already have and make school board policies that fit, rather than imposing a state mandate on how they need to behave. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Matt Toburin with SEIU, the Union of School Support Staff. First, I want to thank Representative Bills for removing lines 1.11 and 1.12. I think those certainly caused the most serious concern amongst our members. I do just want to say we do have concerns over this bill. I do want to first say that we in no way support using public funds or school district resources for political purposes. And we are very clear with our members to not do that and to be very careful with how they go about conducting themselves in those matters in and outside of school. But I think our concerns are more around the implementation of this and sort of going to Ms. Allschwager's comments of how exactly it will be interpreted, communication, and especially member-to-member communication or union member communication to their fellow union members and what might or might not fall under this net of political purposes. As it's been said, there are many school districts who have policies like this in place and policies that are working, and we certainly support those policies. But we would ask to not add an additional mandate onto school districts to force all 340 to create these policies if they don't feel that that's something necessary for their school district at this time. So with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public portion and comment of this bill. Representative Bills, did you have any comments before we went to member questions?
No, Mr. Chairman.
First on the list is Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, today, in fact, I received a call during school hours from a school. This technology we have is great. You get to see where it comes from. It was a larger school district, so it was showing up as their generic number. And as a freshman, I remembered receiving frequent emails, calls, etc., and some of these during school time from staff. And I thought that was peculiar that they'd be utilizing, the school and district resources for lobbying. And I understand why this bill is brought forward. Having been a previous school board member, I'm aware of the association having assistance in different procedures and policies so that the effort really is minimal to put in a policy. But apparently that minimal effort is too much to have this as a general policy because, again, I repeatedly receive during school hours, phone calls and emails from staff, and quite interesting, last session even received a series of phone calls from students right after school lobbying on behalf of one opinion of a bill. And so I think there is a need for us to clarify that this is not a appropriate practice, since apparently the districts that are allowing this to happen aren't taking care of it. But yeah, just less than 2 hours ago. So apparently it's still going on. Thank you.
Representative Kwan, Representative Dabney, then Melanie.
Is it 1 o'clock yet, Mr. Chair?
Yeah, it is. I'm looking at it right now.
Okay, thank you. How'd I do?
Matter of perspective, Representative.
It certainly is. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, a question for Mr. Aronson, if you could.
Mr. Aronson, if you could please come back down. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Aronson, I'm thinking back vaguely to last year. Chair Erickson worked with your two principals associations on a framework for evaluation of principals, and it was very rich and detailed and multidimensional. And part of that, as I recall, was in defining what an effect part of the task of being an effective principal was acting in the community and actually being aware of political trends as they affected education. And I enjoy meeting with students, and I'm thinking particularly of student teachers and student nurses, and I tend to think of nursing and teaching as very similar in terms of professional status. And one of the pieces that I always affirm on Nurses Day, the student nurses who come into my office, is that they're engaging in the political process, that part of being a professional is engaging in the political process and bringing your professional knowledge, insight, wisdom into the political process for the rest of us who aren't nurses or whatever it may be. When I look at Mr. Aronson lines 1.11 through 1.14 maybe, I'm having a hard time squaring the responsibility that we've put on your members about being aware of the political process, being engaged in the political process. Well, was that what before I got here?
Yes.
How'd I do on the redistricting bill? Redistricting maps, Mr. Chair. Can I offer an amendment to your bill when I don't have one? Thank you. Can I go up to my office now?
Representative Dabney, it's free will.
Like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's nice to know I'm again here today to provide a little light humor to levy the day. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Oh, no, I don't think that's necessary.
thank you for your response.
Thank you.
Representative Downey and then Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Say, I forgot to put my name on. I'm not sure what the committee protocol is, but I handed out two handouts. One says the big sell, and the other one is titled Election Success, Proven Strategies for Public Finance Campaigns. And I really appreciate Representative Bills bringing this bill forward for us. I think it's pretty obvious to everyone that levy referendum campaigns in particular have gotten to be very sophisticated events. And I don't know if you read through these two handouts and see anything that implies an inherent conflict of interest or anything that would just innately be a violation of the guidelines for district personnel in providing information as compared to lobbying and activism on behalf of a levy referendum question. But, you know, when you see the article, The Big Sell, and it says, passing a bond issue means finessing the fine art of salesmanship. And this, the audience, the intended audience here is district personnel. The next one you can read, Election Success, Proven Strategies for Public Finance Campaigns. It's put out by the National School Public Relations Association. And there's a whole toolkit, sample campaign letters, flyers, scripts, PowerPoint presentations, checklists, and much more on vital topics. Research, creating strategies, organizing tactics and materials, setting timelines and deadlines, all for the people who are supposed to provide objective information to the public so they can make an intelligent decision. And again, I don't mean to imply that any of these materials or these articles, you know, cross the line, the technical line. I don't know if they do or don't. But pretty clearly, passing these levy referendum questions has become a very sophisticated operation, fine-tuned, well-funded, et cetera. And I think all of us have seen how that's played out in our districts. We've seen how election campaigns and collective bargaining has, you know, turned into teachers wearing T-shirts and putting up signs and, you know, all kinds of things in the classroom. I just think this is an important bill, and if the school districts and the school personnel maybe didn't have a vested interest and perhaps a little bit of built-in bias on so many of this, we wouldn't need Representative Bill's proposal here, and we could stay out of it and not force this mandate. But I think they have self-interest and have demonstrated over a period of time now that these things have become really sophisticated, big operations, and we would do well just to make sure that it doesn't cross the line into the classroom and violate the clear delineation that we're supposed to have between school resources and school people, and pretty much just staying out of it. So thanks, Representative Bills.
Representative Briner, then Greiler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was here when Representative Bills did the amendment, but if I had a little bit more time to have read and thought about it, I would have asked a question then. So I'd like to ask now, Representative Bills, when you eliminated lines 1.11 and 1.12, what was your intention?
Representative Bills.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Representative Briner. My intention is to try to create a compromise between, you know, you obviously see people like Mr. Kishlishan, and I know of others in my district, and believe it or not, even teachers who feel the same way to one extreme. And then you see Ms. Allswiger and Education Minnesota, and they seem to be quite a ways apart. What I'm trying to do is find some type of compromise where we can at least begin. I think it's a good message to send to districts that this has worked in Lakeville, and giving it some time, it can work in other districts as well.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm taking that to mean that you would see that there's a legitimate role for school boards advocating to the legislature and to Congress on particular issues, or citizens advocating to their school board, or teachers or employees advocating to the legislature, et cetera.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and Representative Briner. Not getting into my personal opinions on this matter, I think it would be valuable to attempt to move forward in a way that would let the teachers teach and the students learn and the lobbyists lobby, and see if we can move forward in that direction.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, the heart of my question goes to 1.14, the line that is remaining after you've taken out the third point. And my concern is that, in effect, the remaining language really doesn't, you really aren't restoring any advocacy potential, because there's this phrase, advocate for any other political issue. And without the third point there, what becomes the definition of other?
Representative Phelps.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Briner. Representative Briner, I did eliminate 1.14 as well.
Oh, you did?
Yes, I did.
Okay. All right. Good. All right.
Representative Greiling and then Mariani.
Thank you.
I'm sorry, Representative Briner. I thought.
Oh, that's all right.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, that does make a big difference, because I would interpret that to mean that you would see an appropriate role for advocacy, but maybe you're not saying that. You're just trying to reach a compromise. But I wanted also to add to the discussion, because there was a parent from Roseville talking about their legislative action committee. Mankato has had a legislative committee for over 20 years. I have never seen advocacy as expressed in this email. We never send things out to our parents, etc., but we do, the school district has annually created a legislative platform that advocates for issues of concern that are based on what that committee sees as its professional responsibility to convey to legislators what is actually happening in a school district, what is the actual consequence of certain positions, you know, what are the district's responsibilities to special ed, et cetera. So it's an education arm that's meant to inform legislators. Do you see your bill as eliminating that type of activity?
Mr. Chair and Representative Brenner, no, I don't, because the school board is an agent unto itself and not contracted, unless that's the way I see it. I don't want to go into hypotheticals, because there's just too many of them.
Representative Brenner, was that it?
Yes.
Thank you. Representative Greiling and then Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First, I think for committee members, if there's any other late-coming Democrats or Republicans, but I guess it's the Democrats, what we deleted in this delete-all amendment, DE2, is 1.11, 1.12, and 1.14. So hopefully nobody else will get caught up in that. But that's why, Mr. Chair, I asked to have it repeated, and why, you know, I think especially the Democrats are slow getting here sometimes. So we have to really go slower. We can't catch on to what we're talking about here. We need to cut us some slack.
Senator Greiling, you know the mics are on, right?
Yes, I do. So I just want to say two things. One, regarding as Mr. Kisselishian's testimony and regarding the handout, the Roseville Area Schools, I notice you've highlighted and are thinking that, I think your highlights are to show that this is partisan, that they're picking on the governor and telling all the members, people in Roseville Area Schools territory to call the Republicans, and you've highlighted that all of them on the conference committee are Republicans and so forth. And I know you're very political, so I know you know, but just in case there's anyone that is looking at this handout that doesn't know, usually there are Democrats, Mr. Kiselishian, on the conference committee. Last year was the first year, I think ever, but certainly since I've been here, that it was all Republicans. So it might look like it's picking on Republicans, but that's because Republicans were picking on the Democrats and didn't put any on the conference committee. And also, I think it's because they were looking at issues and they were with the governor. He was actually advocating for more money for schools, whereas the Republican bill was cutting education. Luckily, he won and we got the $50 per pupil. But what might look partisan if you don't look into it is actually issue-oriented. But my comments then for this committee are, and I could have taken that up with Mr. Kiselishian back in Roseville, but I thought it applied to the whole hearing here. I thank you for the changes that you've made, and I could see where Mr. Kiselishian or even Representative Quam, they're not getting their issues addressed as the bill now stands. But from my perspective, that is a good thing. You know, I come from the League of Women Voters, and that was my political cutting my teeth in my life before I came here. And it's always a constant battle to get people to be involved and to get them to pay any attention to government and what's going on here. And it's a rare individual that will actually receive something like this action alert from the Roseville Legislative Action Committee or get something from Education Minnesota or whatever group they belong to actually read it, be motivated by it, and then to actually act. You know, that's a very hard thing to do. And your bill, as it originally stood, would have gotten in the way of citizen involvement that we get so little of. You know, if I hear from three people in my district, I think, wow, that's a big issue. And if I hear from Ken, that's something that really has a lot of steam. And so I think we need more of that and not less. And I'm glad you recognized that and took those parts out of your bill, and I appreciate that. What is left? I have a question. I think the school boards can figure this out, and they've testified they don't have a problem with the bill. But on line 1.10, you've got advocate the passage or defeat of any referendum question. That's what they cannot do. But then on 1.18, they are allowed, and they, you know, are shall not be prohibited here from doing, providing factual information on the levy referendum. And that's what they do right now, and I think that I'm glad you left that in there. But I just hope you don't take anybody's suggestion to make a penalty if they do one and not the other, because I think it's a fine line between what's a factual information and what's advocating for something or against something. Sometimes when you present the facts, it looks like the facts speak so clearly for themselves that you are advocating for something or against it. So I hope as we go forward that you don't add any penalty in, because I think we could be hung up with paying lawyers with school money if we do that, because I think it could be in the eye of the beholder if they are advocating for a referendum versus providing factual information. So I thank you for how you ended up with your bill.
Thank you. Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would echo Representative Grayling's wise thoughts here. I think there is a fine line between our public agencies engaging citizens in such a way that we encourage them to be involved, and obviously we exist in a partisan world, and I think we often throw that word around a little carelessly. I don't think partisanship is necessarily an evil thing. It often means that there's more than one opinion. There's more than one interpretation of something. I think what makes us a particularly strong society is that there is more than one opinion, and we have a clash of ideas, and we engage in those fully. So we don't want to put the kibosh on that. I just want to, this is almost a more minute point, Representative Bills, but on line 1.13, and I'm really glad Representative Dabney went before me, because I would have I was about to go right into that same hole, Representative Dabney. We often race each other to see who's going to be the last one to committees. And, but
you're just beating up on yourself.
Yeah, we are. You know, it's that Catholic Lutheran guilt thing. You know?
Democrat punctuality disorder.
Yes.
Yeah. Representative Mariani.
EPD. Yeah. So Representative Bills, at 1.13, I think the emphasis of the language, solicit funds for political purposes, there's two things here. One is the whole notion of soliciting funds, and then there's political purpose. And it seems to me that this language could be tighter. I think that political purpose, you know, could mean a lot of things for a lot of folks. And I know that, so here's my cheap shot for the day. I know that former Pennsylvania senator yesterday identified global climate change as not a science-based issue, but a political-based issue. And it would seem to me then that if that's a reinterpretation of what that is, then, you know, any soliciting of funds for perhaps ecological, you know, after-school activities might be interpreted as politically, for political purposes. I don't mean to do a cheap shot. I just really offer that by way of encouraging you to tighten that language up. In line 1.9 and 1.10, you're very explicit about what you're talking about in terms of political purposes and perhaps a better way, because I do think the soliciting funds for things that we're agreeing shouldn't happen, that language should be there, and perhaps your language on 1.13 might want to reference the 1.9 and 1.10, soliciting funds for purposes identified in 1 or 2. So I'm offering that as a suggestion to sort of avoid, you know, some mischief down the line with this language.
Any other comments from members of the committee? Representative Bills, any closing comments?
No, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. And once again, I think that you can see that there are people on both sides of this issue who are quite a ways apart. And I hope that this can go, I know hope's not a great strategy, but I hope that this can be put through in a way that we can start working towards what Lakeville has done, and in a way where our schools are not being used as in political leveraging. And I guess I'll take off my legislator hat for a second, which I do usually, and put on my hat that I wore from 7:30 to 8:20 this morning, which is a teacher. So I get to be in the school every day. Not to rip on anybody here, but it's usually the highlight of my day, being with those young people. They're much easier to deal with. No, I'm just kidding. And they're 17, 18-year-olds, and they're great. But it's just, we would like, as teachers, I believe, to do our job. And when politics enters into the school building in some of the ways that I have lots of data and examples that I was prepared to use, but I won't. But when we're seeing meetings for political purposes taking place during my contract time between 7 and 3 o'clock, and that's the time that I'm supposed to be working with kids, that I have a real problem with that. And not just me, but there are other teachers who do as well, and there are other parents. So that's to the extreme, and I hope that this language and as amended, this can go forward and send a clear message to please let teachers teach. And that would be my summation, Mr. Chairman.
Your closing comments, Representative Bills. With that, Representative Bills renews his motion to have House File 329 as amended be recommended to pass and refer to the General Register. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay.
No.
Motion prevails. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Representative Bills. The third and final item on our committee agenda today is House File 2244, the O'Driscoll Bill. The chair will move House File 2244 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Education and Environment Finance. Okay. And Representative O'Driscoll, my understanding is the A1 amendment is an author's amendment?
That is correct.
The chair will move the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author would like. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative O'Driscoll, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. This is not a new concept that is before legislative committees here today. This bill has been in the works for a number of years here at the legislature, carried in a bipartisan manner by most recently Representative Dietrich and Representative Downey have been very actively involved in this. In the way of a little bit of a background, you'll recall that last week we were visited by some representatives from the state of Utah who were here to share with us the successes that they had in their state over the last 16 years when they endeavored to remove their student trust lands from under the supervision of the Department of Natural Resources, establish and create a separate entity that could assume the fiduciary responsibilities without having to worry about managing conflict of interest between the student land trust properties and other properties that were owned by the state of Utah that would otherwise be under the charge of the Department of Natural Resources. I know this committee had the opportunity to hear from them and to do some Q&A, so I'll dispense with the comments and reactions from their testimony. As we dig further into this, the reason why this is such an important issue before us today is that under the Constitution of the state of Minnesota, when we were granted statehood, the federal government required that we set aside two sections of land, which is 1 mile by 1 mile in size, to be used for the benefit of the school children here in the state of Minnesota. And the legislature has a fiduciary obligation to manage those lands in the best interests of the students in the state of Minnesota. And if you're familiar at all with law, or even if you aren't, fiduciary simply means this, that you owe a higher level or duty than you would in a normal business transaction. In other words, you have to advocate fully, wholly, and exclusively on behalf of the party that you've been put in charge with. Those are our constitutional charges under the land trust. What we've been doing over the last number of years by asking the DNR in the state of Minnesota to manage these properties on behalf of the school children, as we have put them at a severe disadvantage and asking them to compromise what a fiduciary would do. What this bill does, as amended, will establish a separate legislative oversight committee and commission that will be responsible for hiring, appointing an executive director, as well as putting staff in place who can designate and dedicate their time fully, fully, and exclusively to advocating on behalf of the school children for those trust lands. One of the things that's interesting to note is that if we close books on December 31st and open books on January 1st of the following year when this legislation goes into effect, nothing changes as far as the requirements to be able to process this land, to appraise this land, to extract minerals from this land, to be able to do clearing of timber on this land. All rules, all statutes stay in place. What ends up happening is very simply this. We put a separate commission in place to assume the fiduciary responsibilities to wholly, solely advocate on behalf of school children here in the state of Minnesota and remove the conflict of interest that currently exists or placing the DNR at a disadvantage. The amendment that I've offered today I think is important to take a look at because it establishes a legislative committee versus a citizen/legislative committee. And the structure that I'm advocating for in the legislative committee says that there are two chambers, the House and the Senate. And there's traditionally two political parties, the Republicans and the Democrats. Each body would be responsible for bringing 3 Republicans and 3 Democrats in the House and the Senate for a total of 12 members. There would never, based on political balance in the legislature or in the governor's office, be put into play or in the mix as to who would have any kind of advantage, Republicans or Democrats, House or Senate, in this. What it does is it takes the politics out of it and it says that 6 legislators who are Democrats, 3 from the House, 3 from the Senate, 3 legislators who are Republican, 3 from the House, 3 from the Senate, would get together and advocate as the oversight committee, the commission, on behalf of the students in the state of Minnesota. Mr. Chair, with that, I'll take questions if the committee has them.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. Do you have any additional testifiers that you have as part of your presentation?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'd like to invite Grace Kelleher from the Minnesota School Board Association to join me offer some comments as well.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Kelleher. Please state your name for the record.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I'm here today to support.
Excuse me, I think I got the same coffee that Representative Gaffney had this morning.
We all know Representative Daphne was not drinking coffee.
He was this morning at committee when he made the similar kind of mistakes.
Ms. Kelleher, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I want to just start off and let you know how much respect and honor I have for Representative O'Driscoll for taking on this issue with both hands and ready to dig in and figure out how to help the school trust lands fulfill their fiduciary duties. And I want to thank Representative Dietrich. I like to think of her as the godmother of the trust lands. Chairman Garofalo, Representative Erickson, Representative Greiling, who have through the years always been there seeing how we can better manage these lands. This bill comes out of need. In the school trust lands, we've seen management fees at the DNR rise over 300% since 2004, and administrative costs have gone up 100% since that day. There are big change in the wind, and it's a good time to make sure we are following our constitutional dedication. Presently, there is about 710,000 acres of our trust lands that are restricted or not producing revenue, and that's an issue that's just gotta change. The BWCA trade that's in the wind would offer 32,000 additional acres of school trust fund land and $100 million in our trust fund account that could be dedicated to technology across the state, as we heard before, or additional teachers in the classroom. Last, I encourage you to support the bill because this is about our founding fathers, a little bit about who we are, why you work so hard, why you're sitting here today. Our Enabling Act had this legislation in it. Our forefathers realized that democracy was based on an educated populace. This bill and their dedication, you need to take it to the next step and make sure that school trust lands don't become the credit card for the DNR, and that, in fact, we can uncommingle the funds and give clear accounting to it and clear FTEs that we're fulfilling our purpose in the Constitution. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll pause there and answer any questions.
Thank you. Representative O'Driscoll, do you have any additional testifiers as part of your presentation?
Mr. Chair, at this time I have no additional testifiers. There may be others who want to testify, and I'd be available for comments at that time.
And Ms. Kelleher, what we'll do is we'll make sure everyone gets a chance to offer public testimony, and then we'll come back to questions from members of the committee. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
This is it. Wayne Brandt from the Minnesota Timber Producers Association and Forestry Industries, do you sign up to testify? Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. Wayne Brandt. I'm Executive Vice President for Minnesota Timber Producers, Minnesota Forest Industries. I thought maybe we'd hear from the department. So I'll be kind of amending a little here on the fly. Minnesota Forest Industries members are paper mills, engineered wood products manufacturers, sawmills, wood-based bioenergy producers, and utility poles, and landowners. So pretty much soup to nuts on the primary manufacturing side. Minnesota Timber Producers Association members are loggers, small sawmills, truckers, and allied businesses from throughout the state. I'd like to thank and commend the committee for this hearing, the bill's author, as Ms. Kelleher said, commend Representative Dietrich, who's given so much light to this issue. Representative McFarland is the chair of the Permanent School Trust Fund Advisory Committee that's been working diligently. Representative Downey also serves on that. To thank them for educating folks in the legislature and outside of the legislature, informing folks about this issue, and bringing a lot of light to this issue. I'd like to particularly thank Representative Dietrich, who took the time last fall to come to Duluth, actually Proctor, to speak to my Timber Producers Association Board of Directors. She made, as many of you have heard a number of times, her passionate presentation on these issues. We had substantial discussion about that after her visit, but everyone was very impressed. In fact, it is One of the issues that's been on the radar screens of certainly both of my organizations for many, many years, I can recall testifying. I have been in this position a while, testifying back in the mid-90s. I forget if it was a conference committee or what the committee was on permanent school trust fund issues and the issue of allocating fire suppression costs to the against the revenues in the trust fund, which is one of the great unfairnesses that has continued for many, many years. Unfortunately, it's never been resolved by the legislature to appropriate general fund dollars to correct that injustice of charging the school trust fund lands for those costs. You know, the permanent school trust fund is the only category of land in our state that gets charged for fire suppression costs. We don't charge wildlife management areas. We don't charge parks. We don't charge counties. We don't charge private landowners. We don't charge tribal ownership. We don't charge anybody for fire suppression except for the children of our state, in essence, through the permanent school trust fund. But that's not the DNR's deal. I mean, that's how the money gets appropriated from the appropriating committees, not education finance, but the environment finance committees. And unfortunately, when adjustments were made to that 10 or 15 years ago, they didn't correct that anomaly and budgets. Well, it's never been fixed. I'll just leave it at that. You know, we have several substantive concerns about the bill and some parts that we like. Bottom line, folks want more revenues into the school trust fund. We do too. We provide or we pay about $10 million a year for the trees that we harvest on school trust fund lands. We would like to harvest more trees on school trust fund lands. One of my members in particular imports something more than 20% of the wood that they process from Wisconsin. Pardon me, they are one of the largest producers and consumers here in the state. They would just as soon buy their wood in Minnesota as opposed to bringing it in from Wisconsin. We would like higher quality wood. We'd like to harvest wood that's at its economic rotation age, which we think would provide benefits to the trust. It would also provide benefits to us. Better stocked stands that are healthier are worth more money. Wood is all sold at auction, and wood of that type brings a higher price. A 40-year-old aspen stand will typically have 30 cords to the acre or more in our state. If it's not harvested until it's 60, that will drop off down to 20 or into the teens as it goes further on to becoming stagnant. If you harvest that aspen stand twice in 80 years, you're going to get a lot more cords than if you harvested once in 60 or 70 years. So we think that there are a number of things that can be done. We think that establishing a position of a trust fund advisor, advocate, oversight position, however it might be constructed, is good. We think that, as Representative O'Driscoll proposes, that having that position placed in the Department of Administration seems to make sense to us. We think that the underlying statutes directing how permanent school trust fund lands are to be managed are going to need some work. We think that it would be preferable to resolve some of these issues through fixing the underlying statutes rather than creating a new agency of government, which we don't support. We're not in favor of that. We would be happy to work on the underlying statutes that provide direction to the department and are very open and willing to do that. You know, there's currently 17 public agencies in the state of Minnesota that manage for public forest land. You've got the DNR, you've got with their green trucks. You got different shaped green trucks for the two national forests, Superior National Forest and the Chippewa National Forest. You got 14 counties, they've got blue trucks, they've got white trucks, they got gray trucks, they got tan trucks, they're managing timberlands too. And we're not convinced that another set of different colored trucks is the answer. We know there are others that have a different opinion, arrive at a different conclusion, but That's our view on this matter. And I would just go back to, again, you know, thanking Representative Dietrich for her presentation at my logging association board meeting. You know, one of my directors, as we were discussing this and other legislative issues that afternoon, said, gee, why don't they just tell the DNR to do it differently instead of setting up a whole new agency? So that's kind of where we're at. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you very much. I think the commissioner wants to testify, is that correct? Come on down. Representative Dietrich, we're going to be taking questions, but we'll make sure everybody gets a chance to offer their opinions. Representative Dietrich?
It is clarification at this point. Can I just make it until we go further?
Well, we can make a clarification once all people have publicly testified, Representative Dietrich.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Tom Landwehr. I'm the commissioner of the Department of Natural Resources, and I appreciate your having me here today to testify. I think this is a great discussion. This is a wonderful thing to be talking about. This is an important asset for the state of Minnesota, and we need to keep it always in our foremind. Having said that, I would like to advise you I would respectfully oppose this bill, and the reason I do is because I am one of the trustees of the state trust fund. As a commissioner, I'm the trustee of the state lands, and as the fiduciary, it's my obligation to oppose any actions that I believe will detract from the trust fund revenues, and I seriously believe this will detract from the trust fund revenue. In my opinion, that's the outcome. We're always looking for improvements, and I welcome the opportunity to hear about what's going on in Utah and hear about issues that people may have so we might improve our management of the trust land. But in my opinion, there are several major issues with this bill. One, and to Mr. Brandt's point, I'm not convinced that expanding government is a way to get increased efficiencies out of state assets. I think that this, in fact, makes for very many inefficiencies, to the point Mr. Brandt made, having different colored trucks driving by each other to manage adjacent lands in virtually identical ways does not make any sense to me. I think it frankly crosses the line of separation of powers. Even with the amendment today, this would put the management of state assets under the legislative branch. Which, of course, is not what the Constitution spells out. The Constitution spells out that the legislature shall authorize and appropriate, the executive branch shall execute. This puts those asset management responsibilities into the legislative branch, which clearly violates separation of powers. And thirdly, although this is something that might be easily amenable, this actually deprives local units of government of about $2 million of revenue. Currently, the statutes require that all lands managed by the Department of Natural Resources shall pay a payment in lieu of taxes, payment to counties for lost revenue. This, by virtue of creating a separate agency, does not allow for the payment of those $2 million worth of taxes. If, in fact, the challenge here is to get over some of the conflicts between the department's responsibilities as a conservation entity and as a trust manager, we must realize, to Mr. Brandt's point, that some of those conflicts are legislative in their creation. The statutes that guide the department to manage lands says that these lands shall be managed consistent with sound natural resource policies, and that's often held up as the thing that is a challenge for the department to overcome, but I'd offer that there are several other statutory issues as well, and Mr. Brandt touched on them, but for example, it is a requirement of the statute that before we can sell any lakeshore that we must get legislative approval. So we are operating here with sort of one arm tied behind our back and a mandate to go faster and faster. We're always looking for ways to improve our operation. We've got several things in the hopper right now that I believe will do that, things that will transcend this administration and move us into the next administration. I welcome the opportunity to hear additional ideas. The Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee, as you know, was intended to offer those, and we look to them for suggestions, and I think we are happy to always be looking for continuous improvement. So So, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, with that, I'm not going to expand more. I'd be happy to answer any questions because I'm sure there are a lot of questions about what the department does.
Thank you, Commissioner. I would just ask if you could please stick around so we can conclude.
Would you like me to stay here, Mr. Chairman?
Or no, I'll just stay in the room so that members do have questions before they call upon you. Thank you very much, Commissioner. We appreciate your attendance. Are there any additional comments, any members of the public who testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Craig Pagel? And if you have not, that's the last testifier we have who signed up in advance. If you, any other members of the public wish to testify, please come down and get in line. Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Craig Pagel. I'm the president of the Iron Mining Association of Minnesota. I'm here today to first tell you a little bit about the iron mining industry in northern Minnesota. As Representative Van Zels knows, we do make up about 34% of the gross regional product of northeastern Minnesota. It's a very large industry, much like the agricultural industry here in southern Minnesota. I think what I would first like to say is that the mining industry supports education, not just in the money we pay in royalties, which, if I'm not mistaken, in 2012, based on 2011 mining efforts on trust lands, will be about $34 million. Basically, two companies are paying those $34 million. We also support it in production taxes. It's production taxes are in lieu of property taxes. That's about $17 million that goes to local schools. So $51 million, basically two companies will be paying. And we thank you for the ability to use those minerals and those mineral rights. We also support education, though, not just in money. One of our general managers, one of the gentlemen that runs the mines, is a superintendent, not a superintendent, excuse me. He is the president of the board of the local Hibbing School District. And many of the people that are in the area work in the local schools, volunteering their time as well. But our concern with this bill, and the DE one helps a lot in a lot of ways, we still have a concern that it's an expansion of government to an industry that, quite frankly, we've been trying to streamline a little bit more. What would happen by this is we would have one more entity that we'd be negotiating royalties with. And this bill doesn't spell out how any of that's supposed to take place. I don't see any directive in that. Even if there were, I think we'd still oppose it in that. While the question seems to be that the DNR is not doing a good job, and you're not quite sure where the money goes, what I can tell you is my bosses, the mine managers, would tell you the DNR is doing too good a job on royalties. First off, when we mine something, any of the overburden is placed in an area where they know where everything is. Low-grade minerals are placed in another area so that if, as an example, scram mining that's just starting up in northeastern Minnesota that can actually mine some of the lower-grade ores, they know where they are. It's all taken care of through GPS and mapping that's going on with that. It's very highly technical, much different than, you know, 40 years ago. But what my bosses would say, we've gone from 2002, we were paying about $1.10 on an average for royalties per ton. We now are paying $3.31 a ton. I don't think any other industry in the state has had any fees go up that much. Our concern is if we have another entity we're dealing with, rather than a coordinated effort that's done by the DNR, not just on royalties, but on our mining patterns, where we're mining, and where it's going. I have a feeling that we're just going to add one more layer of confusion rather than working out maybe the real concerns that legislators have and the school districts have. So on that point, I guess I would say that we oppose this, though I know there's been a lot of hard work done on it. I think there's some other things that can be done other than this bill. And I say that respectfully.
Thank you. Are there any other additional members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns about the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion of our bill. We'll move to member questions. And for those who had previously testified, please try to be available for questions if members do have a question for you. Representative Dietrich, thank you for your patience.
Yes, I just wanted to clarify. When Mr. Brandt was up, he said that this creates another agency, and it does not. he has this confused with a previous bill. This the school trust lands director would be housed in the Department of Administration, so it does not create, it does not expand government, it does not create a new agency. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to say that before people kept saying that.
Yep. No problem. Thank you, Representative Beatrix. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I find myself in kind of an odd situation here. And I, while I appreciate all of your interest in the exploitation of northern Minnesota's great resources, I've after a lot of struggle with this, I've concluded that this is really wrong. This is not a good idea. We all want to generate more public revenue off public lands for public purposes, whether they be for educating school kids or other public purposes. I find it somewhat disingenuous, however, that many of my colleagues in this legislature and in this world we're living in, when people from northern Minnesota ask you to allow for expedited production and expedited harvesting and expedited use of these resources, I get kind of a mixed reaction. So that's my first point. In order to generate more resources for kids or any other public purpose, you have to let us in northern Minnesota develop our resources. Our resources are wonderful to enjoy and to look at and to recreate in, but they also are resources that need to be developed. Secondly, it's my belief that the budget cutting period of the last 20 years is now starting to show its failed outcomes. You can't starve public agencies. You can't expect public workers doing public, providing public services to provide those services without appropriations from the legislature. We have starved the public agency that is targeted here, the Department of Natural Resources. And yet we've expected them to manage those public resources, especially those resources involving forestry and minerals. It doesn't work. They have had to backfill and support the services that this legislature has required them to provide with appropriations and funds and things that probably should not have been allowed. I would just, lastly, I'll thank you for your indulgence, Mr. Chair, but, you know, we've got 2.5 million acres of land that were, that's in question here. Three counties provide or hold almost 70% of those lands, and I have not heard from one school superintendent, one school board member, one teacher, one county land manager, one mayor, one county commissioner. I haven't heard from anybody in those three counties that this is something that this legislature needs to do. They all would agree, if you ask them, however, that we need to maximize, for public purposes, the resources on school trust fund lands. But to create another entity and do some of the things that this movement suggests, I think, is very premature and probably not in the best interests of northeastern Minnesota. And lastly, although I chair the delegation from northern Minnesota, my views and what I just said certainly are not shared by them. Those, what I've just said, are my own views, Mr. Chairman.
Nice disclaimer.
Thank you, Representative Anzels. Representative Reinert, then Downey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, I'd like to ask about your thinking and moving from a legislative citizen commission to a pure legislative commission.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, the reason for moving from a citizen and legislative committee to a complete legislative committee is those individuals are all on equal footing. They're all elected by constituents, part of the legislature, which is charged with the duty of administering the trust lands as part of the fiduciary obligation that's incumbent upon them as part of the state statute. The second part of it is, if you go back and count up the number of people who would be on that commission, it's an odd number. We could be putting in undesirable politics on that. By this model that I'm advocating right now, again, three Republicans from the House, three Republicans from the Senate, Democrats from the House and Democrats from the Senate, you have an even number. There's going to have to be a majority agreement among people, because there isn't the odd-numbered person to be able to break the tie, if you will, on those kinds of things. And I think that it depoliticizes the process. And you have citizen legislators, or I should say citizens, in on that. You may not always be drawing from the people who have the largest information or base or experience on these types of things. But again, the legislature is dedicated by Constitution to advocate for these, and that would be another way we would be able to make that happen.
Representative Briner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a series of questions, and I'm trying to think through how best to approach this. First of all, is this model used by any other school trust land states and managing their lands?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative, not to my knowledge.
Representative Reiner.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that exactly goes to one of my concerns, and that I know we only heard from one other state, but when Utah spoke, one of the things that moved me to have interest in their model was the type of expertise they brought to the table in terms of balancing what they talked about as a laser focus. Mm-hmm. I have grave concern that legislators, by their nature of their office, cannot have that laser focus, because we're generalists, we're committed to a wide range of issues. Sitting on the commission would be one role, and being a legislator would be maybe a competing, conflicting role. So I'm very concerned about conflict of interest and about whether we could get the level of return on our school trust lands that was evidenced in Utah if we have a commission made up totally of legislators.
Did you have a response?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Reinhart, my reaction to this is twofold. One is, given the fact that the legislature would make up the commission, they would also have an executive director and staff, and they would be able to direct to go out and get those kinds of information on behalf of the group. Nothing different than what this committee would have as a power to be able to ask for someone to come in, to be able to bring information, to move forward in data collecting. Secondly, on that, is that this does no way preclude the commission from exploring and bringing in other experts to hear from them or partnering with them for the benefit of the school children.
Representative Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm still left with a concern about conflict of interest, but I'd also like to ask if you sought any legal advice in shaping this structure.
I did not. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, I have not sat down and consulted with the legal counsel on this. I'm putting this forward as legislation that I think is within the guidelines of what the Constitution says, and I'm bringing it to the process. And if you have some concerns about that, I certainly would be open to sitting down and visiting for some of the questions or constitutionality, if that's what you're raising questions on with conflict of interest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have very serious concerns, and I came into this meeting today thinking I would be a strong supporter of this bill, but I can't support the bill without some of these issues being resolved. So at the moment, I have very serious reservations.
Representative Downey, then Mariani, and then Ward.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to try and address a couple of the. I'll make a comment, and then if the author wants to comment back, he can. But I handed out some materials that are part of the financial picture that has become clear to me now, having been on the Permanent School Fund Advisory Committee for, I guess it's just 6 or 9 months. And what I want to make clear to people is that the information that I handed out, the lost revenue chart, and then the effects of the increased contributions on the permanent school fund table were not produced by the Department of Natural Resources. In fact, to try and extract any financial information, let alone a coherent picture of that financial information, let alone a coherent understanding of how well these assets and investments have performed over even the last 20 or 30 years, has been essentially impossible. And so the information that you're looking at before you was not able to be produced by our fiduciary. In fact, this was produced by a handful of staff people spending some time doing a bit of research and digging up some information and running it past the State Board of Investment. And even when the Department of Natural Resources came forward and said, oh, gosh, we got to react to this, the legislature is serious this time around, and came back with some kind of a position description so that somebody within the DNR would actually start performing the function of fiduciary, there was not a word in that position description or that order, whatever the operational order, I guess is what they called it, that had anything to do about return on assets, return on investment, a coherent fiduciary-type set of functions that would look at this thing from an investment return standpoint. And so I'm here to tell you that based on my own personal experience sitting in these meetings and trying to extract even the most basic information from the Department of Natural Resources, I'm here to tell you the DNR has not fulfilled its mission as a fiduciary for at least the last 20 or 30 years, and that's all the information that you can come up with. In 1908, Minnesota had the second largest school trust land value in the country, second highest, 1908. Today we're in the bottom third. We share a fiduciary responsibility as elected officials along with the Department of Natural Resources, and I got to tell you, we have been failing as well. And thanks to Representative Dietrich and others, and frankly the folks up on the range, Representative Rukavina and others who've continued to sound this alarm that we aren't doing our job, we got to listen and we got to do something. And I think any kind of graying of the lines or, oh, gee, maybe we don't need to move this fast. Well, I'm telling you what, I don't know what we need to do. It was 1908 to 2012 that caused the problem. If we got to wait that long again to do something because we got to watch it some more, then we're derelict in our duties too. And I got to speak really strongly on this. This is a huge mistake asking an agency whose fundamental core mission and ethic is land preservation and another kind of environmental stewardship ethic that governs everything they do, to ask them to also be fiduciary managers of an asset, a pile of land and other types of assets along with an investment fund asset, it's just a mistake, and it's nothing bad against them. It's just not who they are. Even in their operational order, very little about how we'd actually manage this thing from a return on investment and a return on asset standpoint. So I'm going to walk you through these charts because I think you need to see the information that we've had at the advisory committee the last 6 to 9 months. And again, this didn't come from the DNR. This came because we produced it as an advisory committee. Lost revenue, you can see the items that you go back and look over the last 20, 30 years, opportunities that were missed or expenses that were over-allocated to this permanent school fund. You can see that list there. I'll come back to that when we total it up and show you what the State Board of Investment determined from that. You look at total land revenue equalized for acres owned, and you see Minnesota compared to other states. You go on to the next one and look at the revenue per mineral acre. And I don't know, maybe we went from $1 to $3 on some kind of royalty charge in the last couple of years. But I'll tell you what, we're not getting the money out of the acreage like we could. And whether that's because we haven't had the production, as Representative Anzell said, or maybe that should be 10 times the royalty level that it is today, I couldn't tell you. But neither can anybody in the DNR. And you add all this stuff up and you hand it off to the State Board of Investment and you say, gee, what if we had actually had those revenues over the last 30 years, the ones that we can track, just a handful of ones that became obvious after months of digging on the advisory committee, what would that trust fund look like had we actually managed this a little more aggressively, leveraged those opportunities, not had these overcost allocations, $245 million more in that fund. It's 700 and some million right now. $245 million. This is just what we came up with. And they can't tell you this. So, members, I think, you know, we can argue about the finer points, and, gee, did we have lawyers look at this, and, boy, is this the exact right structure with the legislators, or should we have something different? But I got to tell you, we got to do something different. And we aren't adding any new layers of government. We're simply taking that advisory committee. We're reconstituting it, giving it some real authority, and allowing them to hire somebody who thinks like a private sector investment manager to do the job that we should have been doing for the last 30 years, maybe the last 100 years. You go back all the way to the Northwest Ordinance, the land ordinance of whatever it was, 1874 or whatever the year was, and it talks about taking parcel Section 16 out of every township and dedicating it to the schools. This is a 153-year ethic that we've inherited as a legislature and as a people of Minnesota. And you know what? Minnesota doubled down on that. And we said we're going to allocate Section 16 and Section 36 of every township in the state of Minnesota when it forms. And we're going to use that for revenue for the schools. Two sections out of every township. You know what? If we owned that land today, if we hadn't sold it, if we hadn't traded it for swampland and all this other, I don't mean to bash my ancestors or yours. I mean, I'm sure they were making as best a decision as they could. But if we had that land today, it'd be worth over $20 billion. $20 billion. You know, what have we been doing? We got to deal with this thing right now, and if we can't deal with it legislatively, and if the department's going to fight us tooth and nail on every one of these moves that we're proposing to make here in Representative O'Driscoll's bill, then maybe there's some other avenues that we as legislators can pursue to force the state of Minnesota, us included, to actually fulfill our fiduciary responsibilities. The time is now, and graying the issue or creating all these little, you know, subplots as to why we can't do this, we can no longer make excuses. We got to do this year.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative O'Driscoll, who, under this bill, who manages the land?
Who manages the what, Representative Mariani?
The trust fund lands.
Representative O'Driscoll.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, what would happen would be that those lands would be identified from the DNR, be moved over into the commission. The commission, the legislative commission I'm talking about, would have the oversight. The day-to-day management would be done by the executive director and the staff, and then those kinds of things would still have to come back to under current law, that would have to be approved by the legislature, would have to be approved by the legislature for sale or for other, and all other laws would still have to be followed in the state of Minnesota that would deal with timber or mining and the like.
Representative Mariani. So, Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll, and I'm kind of like a number of other members that, you know, I'm attracted to this, but I'm also wanting to be really responsible here, particularly when we have language where, you know, the director, I'm trying to decipher or interpret for myself, you know, what does it mean when the director and the Department of Natural Resources can't agree to certain management frameworks, and we have then the ability of the director to move services to another agency or an outside entity. And I can see some of this is very descriptive. It talks about, you know, payroll services, you know, et cetera. And that seems, you know, okay to me. But if any of this implies that someone else is going to be actually managing land, then I want us to be real clear about whether or not we're intending that. And if so, who would that be? And that might require perhaps a longer conversation than we have time for here. And so, Representative Downey, I totally dig your passion on this. But, you know, lawyers do need to look at this very carefully. We are talking about the lands of the state of Minnesota. And if there's language here that suggests that the physical management of land, you know, could wind up somewhere else than DNR, I think we need to be clear about that. I don't think that's your intent, Representative Driscoll. Clearly your intent is to make sure that whatever management happens within the guidance and the parameters of state law. And so I guess let me come back to my question, which I know is partly confusing, but I'm trying to work through this. Is there anything in this language that would suggest that anyone other than a state agency would ever manage these public lands?
Representative O'Driscoll.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, yes. And the reason for that is right now what's happening is when these lands are under the management of the DNR, they decide how much is going to be charged against the trust funds for expenses when the revenues come in unchecked. If we were to say, let's move over under this commission, the administrative responsibilities, but then we don't have any way to be able to balance back against the DNR for the charges that they're going to be doing this, we shouldn't even have this conversation today. We need to have some checks and balances within this provision that if the management, the commission, the executive director feel that they could receive some of those consultations, resources, and other things from an outside source, that yes, and perhaps they should have that ability to be able to do that. Otherwise, we're no further ahead than we are today.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Driscoll, I appreciate the forthrightness and clarity that you're sharing here in this regard. This will need to settle in my brain for quite a while before I take this kind of jump, even though I share with you and Representative Dietrich the ultimate goal here. I do want to say, Mr. Chair, quickly, too, that, you know, Representative Ansells said something I think really needs repeating. And I served on the Environment Finance Committee 10 years ago, and there aren't too many members around this table who were even in the legislature 10 years ago. And one of the things that we saw happening, and it's like looking in the mirror and pointing at yourself, is that we, in fact, were severely undermining the appropriations to DNR. And, you know, it's a proverbial thing about the balloon. You squeeze in on one part, it's going to pop out somewhere else. I am not excusing any of the behavior of DNR. Representative Growling shared some horror stories last week about both department and legislative decisions were, you know, hey, you know, easy, let's pick this off. But on the other hand, you know, there is that kind of inevitability of state laws requiring the department to do things while we're severely cutting appropriations. And then we began to see a huge jack up in licensing fees, all sorts of permitting fees. We heard the testimony earlier by our friend from the north on minerals, where the tonnage fees have tripled. There's a reason for that, and the reason isn't just because DNR is evil. The reason is because the money has to come from somewhere. And I guess what I'm suggesting is here, as we move forward in this conversation, we have to acknowledge our own complicity in how we have set up the behavior in this state to take money away from the kids. And so this is a much more complex conversation that requires some political courage on our part to make sure that we have a tax system in the state that pays for the services that we require of DNR so that they don't wind up taking it out of our kids. But my main point, again, really has to do with, you know, my uncertainty about, you know, eventually where responsibility for management of this land is going to lie. But I appreciate your forthrightness in it.
Got Representative Ward, Representative Fabian, and then we're going to take action on this bill. So, Senator Ward.
Senator Ward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Ward, I'm sorry.
That was Freudian. I know that, Mr. Chair. Just a couple quick comments, and I know we're running out of time here. Representative O'Driscoll, I too have concern, as Representative Briner did, about going to it from a legislative citizen committee just to a strictly legislative committee. So I just wanted to voice that, number one. I don't have to beat it to death here, but when we take things on, you know, we need to listen to citizens, period. Beyond that, though, I do applaud you and thank you for this. And, you know, Representative Hanzel and Representative Mariani addressed the fact that, you know, we have a lot of starving kind of situations down here that we have created, including starving our education system, including starving our kids in the state of Minnesota. And when people are starving, they'll do anything to survive. And so I, you know, part of it is the DNR has, you know, all agencies are all, you know, as we haven't had a balanced approach in our budgeting here in over a decade, we do need to consider that as well. However, we also need to make sure that we do what we can to finance and fund education in the state of Minnesota. And so, Representative Downey, I thank you for this information, and Representative Driscoll and Dietrich and everybody else, that we've heard over and over and over. And Commissioner Landwehr, I know we don't have time. My question was going to be directly to you, Commissioner. I would really appreciate, as we move forward with this, to hear from the DNR how you are going to help us with a better return on the investments. What is the DNR going to do? I know that you set up a position for that. So I won't take the time to ask you that question or have you come down, but I really would appreciate the DNR coming forth with some information like this, like we have gotten from the Advisory Council, on what are you going to do, what was your plan to improve the investment for our children, cut back on the administrative costs, cut back on, you know, some of the other ways that we have not received the funding through the school trust that should be there, quite frankly, in my opinion. So I'll just leave it at that, Mr. Chair, and thank you for allowing me to ask that.
Representative Fabian?
Oh, thank you.
Well, Representative Dietrich, inappropriate, you get the last question or comment from the committee before we move to the author for closing comments.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that. And I just want to, I would like to make some closing comments, but I really feel the need to address some of the issues that have been brought up. And so first of all is when people speak in support of or have questions about the bill being brought forward, I need to ask you the question, and you think that the current system is working? And I think that we have demonstrated over and over and over again in this committee and mostly in the Environment Committee, because that's where most of my bills end up and die. And if you have ever noticed that these school trust land bills go to the Environment Committee, they don't usually even come into the Education Committee. I could ask Mr. Brandt or Mr. Piquel, how many times have they had to testify in the Education Committee? And I bet it's close to to zero. But anyhow, back to the account and the DNR, actually. Our trustee, how many times has the DNR been in here reporting to the Education Finance Committee what is the state of the trust? What are they investing in? What is the return on the investment? And open it up for questions. So if you think the current system is working, have at it. Continue on. The second piece that I want to bring up is that the accountability piece. It's related to these bills and the status of the trust and that type of thing not even being brought to the Education Finance Committee. But try looking these things up online. If you were a parent or a teacher or a a school administrator or anything, you would be hard-pressed to find any of these numbers in any one cohesive place for somebody to read. I am experienced at it. I tried it again over the weekend, which I've tried many different times, because I heard a report that the DNR did in the Senate, and I thought, well, now I've got to find these numbers online, because they said they were online. I can't find them. And I don't know how any of you can look at Kevin Carter, who is the director, administrator of the Utah School Trust Lands, and see what he, the accountability that he has to the beneficiaries. Not to the lumber industry, not to the mining industry, but to the beneficiaries. And the report that he puts out once a month, just to make sure that the beneficiaries understand what is going on with their trust fund in the state of Minnesota. 5 years ago, people didn't even know they had a trust fund in the state of Minnesota. And if you think that's a coincidence, go ahead and continue to think that. The other thing that I have to mention is that just be very careful. Those in opposition benefit financially from the school trust lands. And there is really supposed to be only one beneficiary. There is one beneficiary, and that is clear in the Enabling Act, and it is clear in the Constitution. And when you stand up and take that oath of office the first day of session, you are confirming that. It is, the beneficiary is the school children of this state, the school districts of this state. There have been some questions brought up about structure. I think there are 13, 14, maybe 15 school trust lands, states that have school trust lands. Every single one of their structures look different. Some of them actually have an elected land commissioner. So we have brought bills forward to you for the past 5 years, and everyone, somebody has something to complain about. It's either expanding government, or it's doing this, or it's doing that, or it's doing that. So I can't support this one, can't support this, can't support that. And this goes across party lines. I've had it on both sides. So this structure has been vetted with many different people, trying to take into consideration their feedback and what will happen, what can happen. And is it my favorite model? No. My favorite model would be an independent agency like the Utah model. But people had suggestions on that, so we took them, and this is what has evolved out of that. And the last thing that I need to say to all of you, did you not hear Representative Greiling at our last advisory, at our last Education Finance Committee? Behind closed doors, people coming asking for school trust land money? I shouldn't even say asking. I'm going to be polite. And then look at who testified here today. That school trust land money that they were asking for was a $3 million minerals account. So this structure is not my favorite structure either, but you know what? In my opinion, we can't do any worse than what we are doing right now. And you know what? If this model doesn't work, I will be the first one to say, scrap it. Go back to the old model. Or find a different, modify this model into a better model. But all as I will say that right now, I believe that this state and the trustees are in breach of trust. So vote for the status quo, continue on, or vote for something different. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Beatrice. Representative O'Driscoll, any closing comments before we vote?
I promise, Mr. Chair, thank you. I'll keep it 60 seconds or less. Thank you for having the opportunity to get this process started again. This is the first stop on this bill. I've not been around here for an awful long time, but what I have learned is that no bill comes to a committee perfectly right the first time and it heads to the floor. There are many committees. There are many things that we need to take into consideration. I remain open to doing that. And what I have to ask you is when you consider your vote today, do you believe that the current model, current structure is the right structure? If you believe that something better could happen, this is your vehicle, this session, to be able to get something better to happen. And so a yes vote today would be greatly appreciated on behalf of the school children in the state of Minnesota. I acknowledge it's not perfect. We have some things that we need to do. But if we don't get strong support today as we continue forward, we're going to be back here again next session. Another whole year is going to go by, and we're going to be asking ourselves, what have we done for the kids? Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative O'Driscoll. With that, the chair renews his motion to have House File 2244 be recommended to pass as amended and referred to the Environment Finance Committee. Members, do not get up and leave at the end of this vote. We're not done yet. So all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion prevails. House File 2244 is passed as amended and referred to the Environment Finance Committee. Representative O'Driscoll, thank you. And we even passed your bill, even though you forgot to bring treats to the committee for your first visit here. Representative Greiling, at the beginning of this committee, you had said there were some additional questions people had on the digital learning bill. Rather than come back at 5 o'clock, I'm sensing from the committee they would prefer that we address this now. So, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have the bill right in front of me right now, so I don't have the lines, but I think Representative Myra knows. I'm wondering about the cost. I didn't ask about this in the policy committee. I liked Representative Mariani's amendment, and that was, I thought, all to the good, but I saved my fiscal questions for this committee, and then, of course, I was 2.5 minutes late and missed the whole presentation. So I missed it too, Representative Mariani. So that wasn't Representative Myra's fault. It was my fault for not being here and all the Democrats who might have asked those questions. But I think we can't have such a short hearing and in this committee and send off poor Representative Myra to the floor and without, and then she'll get asked these questions on the floor without the fiscal staff and without any help, and that is not fair. So so that's my question is, and I didn't, apparently nobody testified, do the school districts not consider this an unfunded mandate? When we had it in policy, the concern was raised by somebody that this might be hard to do with the small rural districts if they have to have an online course, and they're not currently doing it. You know, for my district, I don't think this would be anything, my district's anything that they wouldn't already be doing. But those small rural districts, and then the fact that it's an unfunded mandate without any money attached, those are my questions.
Representative Myra?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, you may have missed it, but I did have an amendment, A4. And I took out all the different sections that were relating to the Senate's fiscal note. So those were removed, just so you know. That's page 7, line 34 and 35, page 8, section 8, and page 9, section 10. You're specifically asking about having a requirement that the students have one digital course. And I really want them to have that. I know this is unrelated to the money, and we talked about this in policy. Estimates are that 50% of our high school courses will be digital by 2019. That's just around the corner. And I want this in here because it is we need to prepare our students both for college and career. And they need to be, when they hit the ground on their campus at the university or college, they need to be able to have some experience doing a digital course. What I was talking about earlier when you brought up the question about this, and you also mentioned about rural schools or districts not being prepared for this by the effective date. The legislative auditor explained to me, school districts don't need to do a single thing. What the department has done is they have authorized online providers, and the department also has providers cataloged. And so a school district doesn't need to develop its own curriculum. They don't need to develop courses. Students already can take courses from these providers. So it is just recognizing that the digital train is coming and we want our kids on it rather than to be run over.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Myra. I agree with you on the online learning part. I voted for your bill to come to this committee. Mm-hmm. But did you do an oral amendment or did you do written amendments? Because the written amendments I see don't apply to page 2, and that's where my concern lies.
There is
Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, Representative Greiling. There were two amendments, A1, which and that did have an oral amendment, and then there was A4. Neither of those amendments were relating to page 2.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then therein lies my question. At page 2, lines 2.1 to 2.4, high school students must receive at least one digital course credit. Must receive. And in the bill that we had, I was thinking they must take. But what they all have to take one. I see receive this, and this take is the same.
This language hasn't changed. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry. The language on page 2 hasn't changed.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Myra, then Representative Erickson is reminding me, I think it was Representative Taft that was talking about changing must receive to must offer. And if you did that, I think that would take care of it. But I know in the policy committee you did not want to make that change, but you were going to think about it, and that's the word that I think would take care of my fiscal concerns. And I'm, like I said, not worried about the large districts as much as the small ones.
Representative Myra?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greiling, I'm sorry to have given the wrong impression. I had no intention of changing that language. I really think it's important that our students take a class, and sometimes they, you know, need just to be have that imperative, that must, as a requirement. And so I did accept Representative Mariani's amendment, and I was fine with that. And if you were wondering where that is today, we needed more time to converse on that, and I didn't want to bring it forward unless we were in agreement. So so you didn't see that amendment today, but no, I had no intention of changing it to would be offered. Because in actuality, our students across the state are already offered. They all may take a online course. They can opt in any school across the state. They can opt to take an online course right now.
Representative Greiling?
Mr. Chair, back to that in a minute. But I thought we put Representative Mariani's amendment on, and that was.
Oh, I.
Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, yes, I accepted it as a friendly amendment. I also received a note from him, being willing to work with me on alternative language. And we worked on it, but it was it wasn't ready, and so we may or may not be bringing something else forward.
So, Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, then I see this is not an engrossed version of any sort. So, the amendment I thought we voted on it. It's not even incorporated here.
Oh, it is,
Representative Myra.
Mr. Chair, yes.
Oh, two different things. Okay, well then. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Back to my original concern then. You know, there's plenty of things I would like to make this. Okay, I've got it right here. So that one is engrossed. Thank you. Yes, you're right. I'm looking at the one that wasn't engrossed is the O'Driscoll bill, so never mind about that. But there's plenty of things all of us around this table would like to make the school districts do. But when we go to want to make them to do it, we tend to have, there's costs involved. And that's why when there's an extra money, we always adopt this, without any money, then no new mandates. And that's what the school districts often ask for. And this is a new mandate. And it's a good one, but it just happens to be unfunded. That's the problem. I'm not disagreeing that it shouldn't be, but when you're going to say it should be, then there should be some cost. And if it doesn't show up at the state level, though, it does show up at the local level. And that's the nut of my concern. But apparently no school districts are complaining about it.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Myra.
One of the first things I did with this bill is talk to my local people, and I was expecting to have pushback and say, don't put that in there. And actually, I was told they want that in there. They said, no, we want students to be taking a digital course. And I was expecting for the second thing to come back is give us more money. And no, they didn't ask for that. But
I understand that students can take a digital course. They can take a number of courses. That's their option. But I think it is an imperative and a basic that they have this as part of their education. It can be any course. We're not specifying what course. There's a lot of choice involved there. But it is something that I think is very important for preparing them for college and career.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll just make this my last comment. I don't disagree with you. I'm saying I agree with you, but I just think that when it comes to small districts, we should pay for it. You represent Burnsville. You know, I represent Roseville, Moundsview, you know, St. Anthony. Mm-hmm. Those are big districts, so that's not the districts to ask. I'm wondering about Representative Erickson's districts and, you know, anybody else here that has... And you have online teachers, so maybe it's not a concern.
Yeah.
But that is my concern, and I don't feel that we've answered it without hearing from, like, MREA or someone like that.
Thank you, Representative Greiling, and thank you, members of the committee. On a serious note, I want to thank everyone for their attention during this map releasing process, and it ought to be a big day for a lot of people. So, with that, we are adjourned. Thank you.